Who Back When?
Welcome to B022 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast.
Or Doc Past.
No, it's definitely a podcast. And today we are taking a look at the husbands of River Song. Joining me today on the left of my computer screen is Ponkin.
Hello, hello.
And on the right of my computer screen is the person I am not going to call Drood. He is Drew.
Thank you. Somebody. I'm so pleased.
I have no idea what's wrong with Drood or Droodmeister. Or Droobs. Hello, JD, by the way.
Hello. And I'm JD.
Oh, yes.
Not just so, an omniscient narrator.
It is New Year. It is 2016 now.
Yes, it is.
We have had a Doctor Who Christmas special, as we have had for the last few years.
Mm.
Initial impressions. Is it, in general, a thumbs up, a thumbs in the middle, a thumbs down, or a it should be consigned to the bin with Love and Monsters?
Ooh, oh, well, that's a very specifically terrible bin.
Yeah. I think, for my part, thumbs up, in general.
Drew?
My thumb was tugged upwards throughout the episode.
Hot.
I'm not entirely sure, even now, how close to fully erect it got. So, we'll see as we digest it between ourselves. What did you think, JD?
God.
It was a thumbs up for me. Mainly when you compare it to two other things. First of all, the
last... monsters.
Well, let's put it one way. Fear Her is a thumbs up compared to Love and Monsters, and that's saying something. The fact that the last few Christmas specials we've had have been less than brilliant.
Oh, really? Did you not like the last one, then?
No.
Wow. I really like
them. They've gone the way of trying to make them a bit more outlandishly funny. The ones which have been really good, which was the Christmas Invasion, the Snowman, pretty much those two are the single best ones, in my opinion.
What was the last one called?
Last Christmas.
Last Christmas. Drew, the artist formerly known as Drood, what did you think of Last Christmas? Oh, really? Okay, but it was a darker story. I mean, obviously it stole from lots of other films, but it was a darker story. I thought it was quite interesting. And
I'm sorry, right? You think something with a Santa played by Nick Frost is a dark story?
I think something where people are being sucked into their own subconscious.
Nick Frost, Santa.
Yeah, well, I kind of liked him, to be honest. I enjoyed having Christmas episodes, and this one really isn't an exception to that. Christmas episodes are a little sillier than the other episodes, and they sort of have license to be sillier as well.
There's a difference between being sillier, which this is,
yeah,
in a good way. This is like, what was that audio we did set on the train? The heist one.
Oh, yeah, where they go to Stockholm.
Yeah, sadly, I can't remember that one. Yeah, it's that one.
Grand
Theft Cosmos, yes. And that was silly in a good way.
Okay, all
this
right.
This is silly in a good way. Last Christmas had Nick Frost Santa.
Oh, interesting. Well, you know what? The Gustibus, it's okay. I really enjoyed Last Christmas. Last Christmas.
But my emotion about Last Christmas is pretty much the same as Drood's, which was... I agree.
Wow. Fine.
I couldn't take his side.
And you didn't.
So let's discuss The Husbands of River Song.
Yeah. Okay.
It's the first Alex Kingston episode for quite a while. It's certainly the first one with Capaldi.
When was the last one?
The last one was the Doctor on Translaw. So that was...
Oh, right. Yeah. The 50th?
No. The one before it.
Oh, right. Okay.
The one where Clara goes into the time stream and...
Oh, yeah.
Time of the Doctor, wasn't it?
Okay, so I've made very few notes about this one, but one of them is actually, how does this fit into the chronology of River Song?
Okay, that's very, very simple, because she actually references exactly where it fits in.
Okay, oh, where is that? I missed this. Did you catch this?
Oh, we'll see, won't we? Shut up and let him speak.
Because she actually says that she's just left Rory and Amy. And it was the scene at the end of Angels Take Manhattan.
Oh, yeah. She says she was... No, when they read the diary, what's his name? Fleming says, oh, and you've just been to a place called Manhattan.
So it's set just after Angels Take Manhattan.
Okay.
It is also set probably not long after the webisode last night.
Which I don't remember.
And is set just before...
The library one.
Silence in the Library.
Yeah.
It is also, as a small aside, set just before the audiobook The Boundless Sea, which is the first of the Diary of Riversong audiobooks, which have just come out on Christmas Day.
Fantastic.
Well, you do say just before.
I was
actually,
just going to say, yeah.
It's 24 years before.
24 years.
Yeah.
Or at least when they tire of shagging constantly for 2.5 decades.
With singing rocks in the background.
Well, yeah. That'd top you right off.
We're obviously skipping right to the end of the episode there.
Yeah, well, hang on. Can I ask a question about this? Because, like,
yes.
So this is set right before a bunch of other things. In the library one, she sacrifices herself, right?
Correct.
But at the end of this, I mean, presumably all of our listeners have either just watched this episode, so they'll have a fresh memory of this, or they will have watched it in general. At the end of this, I mean, she dies, right? They spend 24 years banging on some red rock, and
not
then...
Not quite.
Okay.
The last night that they spend together is at the Singing Towers of Duralium.
Ah, but it's not her last night of living.
It will be, because then she goes immediately after Duralium to the library, which is where she meets David Tennant.
Right, and then she dies.
But a night on Duralium is 24 years.
Exactly.
She has a time machine, and she has a spaceship. Does the same thing.
Oh, I see. So actually she has an indefinite amount of time left.
Yes, she has 24 years. It doesn't actually state.
Yeah, but it's also 20. Yeah, but it's not just 24 years, like a linear set of 24 years. It's 24 years from which, or during which, to nip off anywhere and spend however much time anywhere else and any time else.
Correct.
Okay.
As long as she stays between the star and the planet's surface, doesn't go around the back, then she's fine.
Right. Okay. All right. I'm a little confused, but let's just ignore that.
It was a get out clause. Because the last night, we know the last night she spent with the Doctor from her diary was spent on the Singing Towers of Duralium.
Yeah, okay.
But rather than completely cut off the fact that there could be any more Riversong episodes with Capaldi, they put in this 24-year clause.
Sure.
Which works brilliantly well.
Yeah, but then Capaldi specifically saying, oh, I didn't say that.
Okay, fair point. Yeah.
And of course... You know, she's going off to meet Paul McGann's Doctor in the audiobooks, which is when she's a professor as well. So that's just after Riversong, the husband of Riversong.
Wait, how so? Why is it just after? Because they even say in this one, that's Doctor Song to you, or...
Most of the time.
Most of the time. Sometimes professor, but most of the time Doctor. So she is already both.
She is indeed, but...
So Paul McGann might be set before this.
No, I think it's set after, from what I've read about the episode.
Okay.
I shall be listening to it later and shall feedback any changes to my opinion.
Okay.
So, well, let us riff off what we think the actual chemistry between Peter Capaldi and Alex Kingston is.
Okay. I think it works splendidly well. First of all, I really enjoy the fact that Alex Kingston, or the Riversong, doesn't recognise him as the Doctor, and I think there's... It's done just enough. With any joke of that kind, there's always the risk of it turning into the Rose Tyler trying to make the Queen say, we are not amused joke. That's just taking a little bit too far from, what's it called? Tooth and Claw?
Tooth and Claw.
But in this case, it was done very well. Yeah, that one, that's awful. In this case, it's done really well. Also, they're of the same generation in a way. I mean, he's obviously older, but they feel... They're a better match playing off each other than Matt Smith and Alex Kingston, for example.
True. What's your opinion?
Well, I couldn't watch this without realising that in the timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly, who-back-when continuum, we have just reviewed a Christmas episode with a fast-talking, scenery-chewing ginger. And now here's another one! And so I was comparing it a fair amount to The Runaway Bride and Tennant's chemistry with... Donna, and again, there is misunderstanding, and there's farce, and it runs throughout the episode, and la la la, and all the punchlines have musical cues.
Okay, so how do you feel like the two pairs compare?
Well, I think that the comedy stuff they didn't do so well.
In this one,
Capaldi and Kingston. I thought that I don't know, maybe the scene was just cut a bit quickly, but I watched the scene twice. Trying to enjoy it.
Are you talking about the one where he's laughing in the snow?
No. I'm talking about the one where they're discussing how to remove King Hydroflax's head.
Oh, right.
And I knew I was supposed to find that scene funny. You know, it was accorded prominence within the episode that everything pointed to, you should be laughing right now. And I did try. I tried to go along with it, and I just couldn't quite. But then when they moved off that and they started stripping back the layers of artifice, you know, one husband at a time, and River gets to have her true feelings for the Doctor and he gets to respond to that, then I really did enjoy it much more. And every scene they had after that.
Interesting.
Oh, I agree. They started off looking like that this was going to be quite a bad bit of comedy.
Oh, interesting. I completely disagree.
But they ended up, and when Capaldi is just going around the inside of the TARDIS going, oh my god, oh, it's bigger.
Oh, sorry, hang on, is that not funny? I love that scene.
No, that is funny.
I love that scene.
No, that bit's funny, but the first bit where they're, you know, where they're talking about the head and stuff, it's just less so. But when she starts flicking through her index of Doctor Who pictures and...
Yeah.
It felt like Capaldi eased into the comedy more after that.
Hmm. Yeah.
Because Alex Kingston is Alex Kingston. She's not changing for anyone. You know, she's a living force of nature. But it felt like he wasn't comfortable at the start with the comedy, and then he became so quite seriously.
I disagree to the point. Oh, sorry.
Well, I just want to contribute my notes from this scene. Doc gets to overact it being bigger on the inside. At this point, finally starting to warm to the episode.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so I completely agree. But yeah, okay, you totally don't.
Well, I disagree in so far as some of the things that you guys didn't find funny, I didn't feel were necessarily intended to be funny. Mm-hmm. As in, we were treated to a little bit of banter and we were treated to the misunderstanding, but I never felt like, oh, wow, there's a diamond in his head. Why am I not laughing out loud? Why is this dialogue not making me laugh? I just didn't feel like that was the intention of the scene. However, yes, I love the scene where he finally gets a go, or it's his go at the bigger on the inside scene. And I think it definitely, and I do agree with you, I think it definitely improves when she realizes that he's the Doctor, as in their rapport deepens in a way. But no, I
don't know.
Fucking hell, you guys. I love their rapport. I thought it was fantastic. Oh, I mean,
the rapport, as, yeah, I think Drew and I agree on the same point in the episode. From that point forward, is very good.
Okay, fine.
Yeah. That scene you're describing, there's loads of signposted jokes. Like, you're a man, you're thinking, don't do it. It looks weird.
Well, I did kind of like that line, actually.
Yeah.
I thought it was okay. Mm. I didn't think it was laugh out loud, but I think it was okay. That whole bit, from the point of her introducing the greatest surgeon in the galaxy to the point where they actually have to escape because they get found out by the dude who really should be dead by now and shouldn't be standing around. That whole bit was so over-dramatized, so incredibly theatrical, that overpowered rather than the humor. Like, the fact that she had to be so pompous and theatrical to the crowds, that was the defining characteristic, I thought. Anyway, whatever.
And, you know, but we did later on get an absolutely amazing Capaldi rendition of Hello Sweetie.
Yes, we did.
Which is probably my favourite line of the episode.
He says Hello Sweetie, but he also... Oh, sorry, not but. And he also says spoilers.
Yes, he does.
Both catchphrases of River Song.
Of River Song.
Mm.
You know, River is a pragmatist in this. She explains how, while she is dearly in love with the Doctor cannot be in love with her. Mm. And it's blatantly obvious that she's also wrong.
Yeah. I think more so with Capaldi than with any prior Doctor.
Well, the thing about Matt Smith, this felt like a loving, arguing couple. This felt like a husband and wife having an argument during the episode. Matt Smith and River always felt like that he was the naughty child. It wasn't a husband and wife. It was...
Yeah, it was like her...
She was the mother.
Well, she was like the 60 aunt, let's face it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
But this felt like a loving married couple. Any more than any time when she was with Matt Smith.
Mm. Okay. Another question. Sorry, it's like tangent, but apropos of loving married couple, when we're in that scene of, oh, I've brought the greatest surgeon in the galaxy, and King Hydroflax is lying down untidily, then he says, you have given me many days of adventure and many nights of wild passion. He's a head on a robot. She didn't even know he had a robot body. Explain. Electronic appendages?
Get in my face and tell me that you love me. That's why I'm going.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you're right.
In a universe where love and monsters exist, I think that's this is the least bit of my problem with the episode.
Okay, fair enough.
Honestly, every episode since Love and Monsters, apart from Fear Her, has been 5.0.
And Fear Her lost 0.1, you know? So we agree that the chemistry between them is quite good, and especially in the ending scene.
Yeah. Mm.
What was your opinion on the guest star of the month for the Christmas episode of being Matt Lucas?
Oh, yeah, of Little Britain fame.
Yeah.
Droobs.
Not just Little Britain. He's starred in a few films, and he's been all over TV. He's got a decent career. And, I mean, I'm going to read out what I wrote for the mini review, which is that Matt Lucas was almost pointless. You expect comedic value added from him, but all he did was squeak, whimper, and cluck to very little effect.
Mm.
Well, I hesitate to agree with Drew, because that's just been copied and pasted from everything else I've said, which is, I agree with Drew. Matt Lucas, but I'm going to put a slightly different spin on it. Matt Lucas was pointless in this episode.
Agreed.
But I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, if we had had more Matt Lucas, if he had been more of himself, this would have turned into a very, very silly episode.
It would have turned into Nick Frost's Santa again.
Which, arguably, I actually kind of enjoyed, but still.
Well, you've already got Ramon, who is a husband. This Nardole, who he plays, is never at any point referred to as a husband. So why do you need him at all? Can't you just have Ramon play both his roles?
I thought Ramon was quite good, and certainly more useful to the story than Narwhal was.
Yes, he was more useful to the story, but he didn't provide any comic relief, and I suspect that's why they kept Nardole in at all. They just wanted a comic relief.
Neither did Nardole.
No, I agree, but everything is relative, right? Not one of the three of us actually really laughed or chuckled at Nardole, but in comparing him to the character of Ramon, clearly Ramon was meant to be, like, not even the love interest, just the loyal companion of River Songs, whilst Nardole is, like, he's the, the Frankenstein's hunchback, called blah, blah, blah.
Igor?
Yeah, he's basically comic relief Igor to River Song.
Possibly. I mean, in being as charitable as possible, I'm going to suppose that perhaps children recognised him from Alice in Wonderland. Horrible film! And
yeah, terrible.
And so he has a funny bald head and a round face, and he makes silly expressions and silly noises, and maybe some kids who might watch the Christmas episode might have enjoyed him. But even then, it's
and you get,
stretch.
I guess, the visual contrast of his round head on this massive red robot, whereas Ramon, actually kind of good-looking guy, his head on a robot, just as a still, just as a poster, that doesn't really sell as well.
I think that Matt Lucas was going to appear in the final scene until he acted his way through that much of the episode, and then he just flounced off the set in rage, and they had to record his voice in a separate studio because he wouldn't come back to appear at the end when they're in the restaurant.
Yeah.
He was just too disappointed.
Yeah, sure.
I guess.
What do you think of Ramon's head being on the robot towards the end?
I think it's very sexy.
But he has spent, like, how much? How long? Millennia, possibly, as this robot, right?
Living with Matt Lucas the same robot.
Inside his robot chest.
Yeah. Having moments to himself.
Yeah. Which, hot slash gross at the same time. But, like, then he meets his wife as she is on a date with her future slash past husband, and there are no hard feelings. It's like, yeah, let me show you to your table. I'm now like, hey, garçon, coffee. Here comes Ramon on his massive robot. I would not have been so blasé about it had I been Ramon. I'd been like, oh, Jesus Christ, B-word, you just left me. Like, you genuinely just left me. I'm a head atop a Christmas robot. And now you're going to go bone this old dude.
JD, restore some levels of sensibility.
Okay. you could argue this in a number of ways. Number one, after so long, and he did say that he was pulled from the wreckage, he got fixed up, the nasty part's all gone, and Nardole's been with him, right? To be fair, after what must be hundreds of years,
yeah,
I don't think he cares.
Well, wouldn't you think that it would turn into one of those alien scenes where you have the badly cloned versions of Ripley just going like, kill me, kill me, and here is...
Maybe he likes being a large robot.
Just a head! Just a head!
He's been a large robot for hundreds of years. He's just come to terms with it.
Yeah, yeah. Detached from his sexual urges, he now lives a peaceful, calm existence.
He's basically just a monk. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah, he's a monk head on a robot body.
But he has the... Oh, like, imagine having Matt Lucas as your perpetual flatmate, right?
That would make a really good BBC 3 comedy series.
Oh, okay, fine.
On a 2 a.m. in the morning.
Once, never repeated.
Failed pilot. Okay, carry on. What's the next point to discuss?
Well, we've discussed Nardole, we've discussed Ramon. Do we have any opinions on Hydroflex?
Oh, yeah.
Apart from scene-chewing overacting.
Which I said...
Which, to be fair, is what he's there to do. That's not a criticism.
Yeah. Yeah. Who plays him again?
Greg Davis. A very tall comedian.
Right.
Who is...
I thought I recognised him.
Yeah,
but...
he's the teacher from The Inbetweeners, and he's had a sort of couple of own written mid-level sitcom successes on Channel 4, but he hasn't really broken.
Okay.
He's all right. He's good on a panel show.
So what did you think of him as Hydroflex?
I thought that when he was properly shouting and bawling, that was fine, apart from when he was in the bag.
Okay.
That scene did go on a bit long, and the chuckles were a little bit forced. But sometimes he wasn't going for it as much as I thought, really. I don't know. I don't think he failed his remit particularly.
Hmm.
Like JD says, he was there to honk and holler, and broadly speaking, he did.
Yeah.
But I think he could have done with keeping it at that level and not sort of flowing off towards the end. I think if you're there to honk and holler, you should do it pretty much consistently.
How do you mean it was flowing off towards the end?
Well, it's one of those things that when he was sort of professing his love for River Song, he did sort of turn into something a bit nicer.
Yeah, I didn't like that bit particularly, to be honest.
Oh no, I agree.
In that very same scene where River Song is massaging his face, I think this is one of the failed laugh out loud moments, yeah, where he's being all serious and she starts, or like he gets too stressed or something, and by massaging his face, he calms down.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a really weird, he's orgasming and taking a dump at the same time, and he only has a head to do it with. And
it's a Ferengi thing.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. Exactly. What's it called? The ear massage.
The ear massage from Frankie.
Oh, you give really good...
Is it unlocks or something like that?
Yeah, it is something like that. Cool.
So a question for you both. One for each of you.
Okay.
Pumpkin.
Hello.
How many husbands of River Song was mentioned in this episode?
Oh, right. Oh, wow. Okay, so she... Sorry, let me go through them. There's Hydroflex, there's the Doctor, there's Stephen Fry, which is fantastic, and then I feel like there was another husband. There were also two wives. I can't remember. There was the other husband that I can't remember was another celebrity, I think. And then there were two wives.
Well, let's go on to Drew.
Hello.
How many wives of the Doctor...
Oh, bum.
...is listed?
Oh, wow.
I can only remember Cleopatra, because that was the very last in the list. Was there Elizabeth I?
Mm-hmm.
And, well, I'm going to guess there were three in the middle, so I'm going to stab at five. Oh, plus River Song, six.
Okay.
Okay, so the answers were...
Yeah.
The husbands of River Song was King Hydroflex, the Doctor...
Yeah.
Ramon...
Oh, shit, Ramon.
Stephen Fry...
Mm-hmm.
And the Diamond...
No! Oh,
she married the diamond, she married the diamond, she married the diamond!
And Drew, yours...
Could also be a wife, by the way, you sexist.
There was no wives listed.
Oh, excuse me, she says, oh, you remind me of my second wife.
That's true, but not wasn't named.
Okay, fine.
Yes, you're right, but no wasn't named. Drew's list would have been...
Semantics.
River Song. Elizabeth I.
Two for two.
Mm.
Cleopatra.
Bingo.
Boom.
And Marilyn Monroe.
Is that it?
Oh,
yeah. I thought they were arguing for longer.
Yeah. Although they did say that Cleopatra and Stephen Fry were the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't really get that. On what level are they the same thing?
Stephen Fry is a great big queen.
Right.
Okay. Oh, I didn't get that at all.
Well, I get it now.
That's another failed laugh out loud moment in that case, at least for me.
Or a delayed one at best.
Yeah.
I should, you know, many associations with Cleopatra, like big nose, Egyptians. Well, Stephen Fry does have a big nose.
Well, Cleopatra isn't a super, like, known for being a super intellectual and a fantastic writer, great speaker, philosopher of our time.
Out of the two of them, I would marry Stephen Fry.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah.
Okay, actually, that joke kind of takes it. No, I feel like That's just in poor taste. That doesn't fit with the rest of the vibe of this episode. Anyway, I'm gonna stick with not having got that quote unquote joke.
Well, which is absolutely fine. It wasn't a particularly good joke.
Mm. Mm. Can we ad lib some sort of quiz for JD as well? I wonder.
Quiz for JD.
Quid pro quo, JD.
Well, that would require one of us to have taken notes. I'll see if I can find anything that will work. He's just going to know everything.
Oh, he is, isn't he? Okay, maybe. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait. So
yeah, cover the microphone.
Yeah, cover the microphone. So, pretend that you can't hear us. So.
He's going to know the answer.
I know. Okay, so I'm thinking something when they're on the pleasure cruise.
Uh-huh.
The Seven Galaxy Cruise, I think it was.
Wait, what's the name of the supernova? I think we're just making ourselves look worse.
Yeah, you're right. Well, I think this is definitely not going into the final cut. Okay.
Anyway, so we're here on Supernova Gamma Andrani.
God damn you.
With the Halassi Andravar.
What's the name of the ship they're on?
The Harmony and Redemption.
And what was the date?
5343.
5343 was the... It was Christmas Eve 5343 in the very beginning. Who knows where they are now?
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know either. I'm just asking.
Yeah, I don't think we find out.
He's just quizzing us. We're supposed to be...
Exactly! You're supposed to be... Oh, all right.
Okay, here's a question for you. Why could that spaceship never have been in Star Trek?
It travelled at warp factor 12.
Yeah, warp factor 10 is the speed of... Well, it's just...
That's just the fastest there is.
Infinite.
Warp factor 10 is infamous, yes.
Yeah, at which point Janeway and that horrible officer turn into crazy super-evolved slime creatures.
Oh, I remember that. And they do it.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, Janeway and Robert Duncan O'Neill as... Paris,
that's the trap.
Tom Paris. Yeah, that's not good. That's not good.
Keep it at warp factor 9.6, people. That's safe.
So, Drew, you out of all of us made the most notes on this episode. Do you have any sort of insight into any bits which you really didn't like or you really liked?
Well, what did people think about the Doctor wearing antlers? Because that's the first... That's the cold zany.
I liked it.
I didn't have a problem with the cold zany.
Mm.
I also liked the...
And by the way, Matt Lucas is good in that scene.
Yes.
I like their exchange there.
And I liked the sign on the TARDIS saying Carol Singers will be criticised.
Yeah.
That scene is perfect Matt Lucas funniness. And then it goes downhill.
Question about the intro. Actually, Mirimu pointed this out as well while we were watching it. And I have to agree. Do you guys agree? Was this basically just the set from, what's it called? Escape the Raven?
Face the Raven?
Yeah.
It's basically just recycled.
It's Harry Potter Street.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Diagon Alley.
With some new signs.
And some snow.
And some snow, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was. It was done in the same street.
Mm. Oh, opening theme sequence animation thingy.
Snow on the TARDIS,
baubles instead of planets.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Snow, basically, rather than stars, and Alex Kingston in the title sequence, which means that she is actually now officially a companion of Doctor Who.
Wait, that makes you an official companion?
Well, you can take your pick as to what makes you an official companion.
I'm pretty sure that on Who Back When, this very same show that we are currently recording, JD...
We have had this argument.
Little J, capital D.
Oh, no, no, don't get me wrong. You and I have had this argument. Well, it's not an argument, it's a discussion. Yeah. Because...
I think that what you said the last time, and what I tend to agree with you on, is that if you have travelled in the TARDIS...
Yes.
Then you are a companion.
If you have more than one sort of trip in the TARDIS, if you time travel in the TARDIS or you help out, you should be considered a companion. It's Kylie Minogue thing.
Kylie Minogue is not a companion?
Did she ever travel in the TARDIS?
Oh, no, I suppose she didn't.
She had one go around.
Did she travel
in the TARDIS?
Nope.
Oh, but she didn't travel in the TARDIS.
Yeah, she had one episode, is what I'm saying.
Okay, yeah, but here's the opposite. Also a Capaldi one, the little girl who goes to the moon. What's it called? Kill the moon? Shoot the moon?
Courtney.
Yeah, the school kid who for no reason gets a free ride on in the TARDIS. Is she a companion? Because she has travelled through space.
There are exceptions. And, you know, a lot of them is the name in the title sequence. It tends to be a fairly good, you know, opinion of whether a companion is now a companion.
Surely Kylie Minogue was in the title sequence.
Yes, which is why she's generally considered a companion.
Oh, I see.
But okay. I bet that... Even though he appeared multiple times, Noel Clark doesn't appear in the title sequence. And we can therefore disregard Mickey Rickey.
Oh, interesting.
I think...
Even though
I
he did get
wrong,
to travel through space and time.
I think Noel Clark is in the title sequence of Journey's End, because everyone is in the title sequence of Journey's End. Sarah Jane Smith is, etc. They're all in the title sequence.
Okay. God damn it, so he wins regardless. Yeah.
Because you should really consider Camille Kadjuri as a companion.
Oh, I definitely do.
Who has travelled in the TARDIS.
But you're saying
she's never been in the title scene.
Okay, I see.
Okay. I thought of a better theme than fucking antlers on head, which is the bodysuits. We've dealt with King Hydroflax's head.
Yeah.
What did we think of the lumbering robot foe, which was actually the antagonist for most of the episode?
Go for it, JD.
That was a reskinned version, it seems, of the robots from Dinosaurs on the Spaceship.
Oh, that's a good point. Yes, very possibly. But regardless...
I thought it was good. Sorry. To address Drew's point, I actually thought the robot was significantly better than Matt Lucas and Hydroflax.
Agreed, yeah. I think the robot was fantastic. The robot actually provided some comic relief, some effective comic relief. And it... does sort of, even though the subject matter is not of the type that, you know, opens up for intellectual debate, this podcast not included, but it does sort of open up the question, who is the actual king? If you replace the heads, who is Hydroflax? Is it the robot that's ruling? Is it the... Yeah. Either way, I thought it was a really interesting concept. Plus, he's red because it's Christmas and it works.
True.
I liked the robot up to a point. It actually comes back to the comic book episode we did recently, where there's the chainsaw-wielding maniac in the TARDIS in the one comic we liked.
Yeah.
And the robot gets in the TARDIS, starts causing havoc. I love that scene!
Yeah.
That I haven't seen much of that. I don't know if that happened in classic Who more, but certainly in new Who.
I don't know. I remember sort of in that sanctuary. Scene as well, like, yesterday, thinking, holy fuck, what if he breaks the TARDIS?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, there's tension in that scene. Agreed, yeah. And nice point.
That was the high point for me. And after that, No, go for it.
I just thought of the low point.
It just sort of was diminishing returns, because he would lumber up, he would pose a threat. I didn't really see how. I mean, he could grab things and he could
threaten to
shoot
the heads.
Yeah, but he never really shot anything, did he?
No.
He just sort of was
well,
a
the
Hulk
threat is
presence.
Really like he's so big that he can grab you and slice off your head and turn you into Ramon, which not necessarily, you know.
Yeah, and that all happened off screen or down an alley. I really, by the end, I was sort of...
And he can fly, and we only really get to see him take off, but he doesn't use that power, so to speak.
Yeah, by the end, he seemed a dead weight to me in every scene he was in. And I was glad when the Doctor rammed the ball onto his head.
Interesting. I think I just thought of the low point for me, which is actually a two-parter, and it bookends it. The first part being when he gets the new order from Hydroflax's head, and he goes, new status, chill. It's like, that doesn't really fit in. Like, why would you use that slang expression in this context? Doesn't fit at all. That isn't funny.
And it wasn't repeated.
It wasn't. No, exactly. Like, it's not a thing that he does. He's not like Bumblebee from Transformers or something. He's just like, he has that one opportunity to do it. And the second one being at the very end, when he suddenly goes into greed mode and it's like, yeah, actually, you know what? What I want is money.
It was inconsistent robot.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, it was illogical.
Yes, exactly.
His circuits, his programming, it was flawed.
So, you know, we agree that the good point is when the robot gets inside the TARDIS.
Yeah.
I believe your question, Drew, was how many times has it happened before?
Yes, that's a good question.
It's incredibly rare.
Ooh, interesting. You mean aliens and robots and whatever, danger aboard the TARDIS?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, one of the single biggest times it happened was in Earthshock, which is the Cybermen on board the TARDIS.
Ooh. Which Doctor is that?
That's Peter Davison.
Okay.
That's one of the times where it actually considered to be there is danger on board the TARDIS, which doesn't happen very often. It's happened a lot more in New Who.
Oh, okay. Okay. Interesting.
Because he materialized around a Dalek at one point.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
When he rescued Rose
I don't remember which episode it is, but I remember him materializing. Yeah,
It's the last Eccleston one.
Parting
of the Ways. And then John Barrowman shoots him. Shoots the Dalek.
Right before he strikes his fantastic Snake Plissken pose. Oh, it's fantastic. Yes. I think there's a screenshot on whobackwhen.com. If there isn't, there will be one.
Need more John Barrowman.
Yes, we do. Oh, tangent. Are there John Barrowman audiobooks from Big Finish?
John Barrowman has done Big Finish, yes. Okay. It's John Barrowman, you know, he's...
He does everything, but...
Well, he'll do anything if someone pays him a fiver. So.
Or lets him sing. He was one of the best parts of the special that Davison, Baker and McCoy did.
Oh, yeah.
The 50th.
Yeah.
Constantly singing. I love it.
But the thing is, he's actually a Doctor Who fan, which is, you know, it's quite important. Because he said that he will go back and play Captain Jack at, you know, 5 minutes notice.
Yeah, and take one, he's the face of Bo. Take two, he isn't the face of Bo. There, we got all the bases covered.
But I thought that was established, though. I thought it was established that he is the face of Bo.
I don't think RTD likes it being explicit.
No, I see. Oh, well.
He's the face of Bo.
Yeah, I think so.
Let's face it.
He did an awful lot of Torchwood audios.
Okay, cool. I'll happily listen to some of those. I really want to re-watch Torchwood, actually. It's been a while. Anyway.
Yes, the Miracle Day is the low point. And there is a really poor episode, which is...
Wait, Miracle Day is the low point?
Miracle Day, I think, is one of the low points of it, because it comes after Children of Earth.
But Miracle Day is the one where no one dies, right?
Correct.
That's super awesome. That's like the darkest serial ever.
Compared to Children of Earth, it really isn't.
Oh, I don't know. You want to take 10,000 kids and turn them into LSD, I think that's fine. But, like, people are immortal and are cremated and shit, and, like, their ashes live on. Ugh. Wow. Oh,
no, that's darker than just screaming in the ground after you've been buried, ready to be resurrected by Missy.
That is also quite true.
But you have, like, the pain, inward boner time for me. I love that one.
If you wish to watch a really bad episode to critique, my suggestion is an episode called Countryside.
That's
Torchwood.
Is that Miracle Day Torchwood?
No, that's season one.
Oh, okay. Oh, season one was just Monster of the Week, though.
There are no science fiction elements in Countryside at all.
Oh, really? Oh, that sounds terrible for a Monster of the Week
so
show.
So popular, then.
Yeah. Anyway, this is not the Torchwood show.
Shagging instead.
Oh, nice. Oh, no, because we had this conversation, didn't we? Like, I had this conversation with someone, where Torchwood is basically, at least season one Torchwood, is they try to differentiate themselves as a sci-fi show by ham-fisting sexual references into this. Like, oh, this is a grown-up show because we're talking about sex all the time and people are shagging left, right and centre. But it just didn't work at all.
I like how, to you, we're all the same. Like, I had this conversation with someone. I mean, you're all interchangeable. You basically reflect my ego.
It seems like the kind of conversation that we would have, is what I'm saying.
So, coming back to Doctor Who. River Song in our circuitous route.
I've got a question for you, JD. Yeah, did I interrupt you? Were you going to say something there?
No, you were about to ask me a question.
Yes, I do have a quiz question for you.
Okay.
How many references to prior Doctor Who were there in this one, classic included, and which were they?
Well, there's at least 12.
Yep.
Okay.
Because there's every single picture of all the Doctors.
Yeah.
There is references to the crash of the Byzantium.
Which they turned into a film, apparently.
Well, yes, did. There was Jim the Fish, which was mentioned when the Doctor went through her diary in Impossible Astronaut.
Which I don't remember, actually, but I recognise this as a reference.
So it's just a reference back to a reference.
Oh, yeah. Right, okay.
I mean, we all know Jim the Fish. He doesn't need any further explanation.
Right. Is he also the electronic or, like, robot fish or something? Because at some point in the beginning, when they're about to steal the TARDIS, he says, oh, he's probably just off somewhere rescuing a robot fish.
No, Jim the Fish is... It was a reference that they mentioned earlier.
Okay.
It's not... Angel State Manhattan.
Yeah, nice one.
The Pandorica opens.
Yeah.
A Picnic at Asgard, which was, I think, mentioned in Silence in the Library, or if it wasn't, it was in Impossible Astronaut.
Okay.
Deadly Assassin, because Riversong mentioned that Time Lords have limits, which is the regeneration limit, which was in Deadly Assassin.
Okay. I didn't get that one at all. Okay.
Of course, you have both spoilers, which was first done in Forest of the Dead. You have the sonic screwdriver, which he gave to her in Forest of the Dead. You have...
I had three in my mind.
Did you have multiple universes listed?
No.
Because it was multiple galaxies, wasn't it, the ship was going through, which is...
Yeah, seven of them. I don't know if that's a reference back to Old Who, though.
No, it isn't. I thought it said universes, galaxies. I think that's where I am at the moment.
Okay.
Is there anything else? We haven't heard the Sonic Trowel before, which I think is absolutely brilliant. We have the Sonic sunglasses brought back, hopefully, for the last time.
Yeah.
From last season.
Yeah.
We have monks with really sort of, soul-bound swords.
Yeah, something. I can't remember what it was.
Which is very similar to the monks that were in the Headless Monks from Matt Smith's era. I think that's pretty much everything.
I've got two more. By the way, you had about 10 times as many as I would have listed otherwise. But I've got two more. One is, possibly not mentioned because it's too obvious, the diary. And the fez. When she empties out her bag, she takes out a fez.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I didn't get that one. I didn't see the fez.
Screenshot, whobackwhen.com.
So, let's sum up, I think. I think we've got to summing up time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, let's have a look at our sort of mini final thoughts or mini reviews before we settle on some probably disagree on our scores. Drew.
Me?
What are your final thoughts?
Well, let me just scroll down. The final thoughts. As we said, I thought the episode started slowly. It didn't gel for me until 10 minutes in, when some sustained quality began to happen. It's not to say it was bad, but I watched this yesterday, which is the 2nd of January, because we were going to wait for Nick Ulele, and fucked off to some other country. So the day before this, I watched possibly the best ever episode of Sherlock, which shared the lead writer in Moffat and the director in Douglas MacKinnon.
I've not seen the new Abominable Bride yet.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you anything about it because it's amazing.
Do not, under any circumstances, know anything about the Sherlock before you watch it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah.
It would ruin it. Sorry, carry on, Drew.
We're watching that tonight, by the way. Anyway, yeah, sorry, carry on.
So, relatively speaking, I was underwhelmed. There are a lot of spoilers given ahead of time. Obviously, River Song is in it, which sort of makes her reveal pointless. No, it's her in the hood. To us, it means nothing because we know it's her. To people who don't know who she is, similarly, it means nothing. Just, the Doctor seems to be smiling around her, which was terrifying, by the way, with his great jagged shark grin. That's possibly scarier than the robot. But we didn't quite get the mad dash across the galaxy we promised because we're in a cruise ship, and so that's one set. Yes, it's travelling, but we are static within it. But once we got down to River's true character, I thought Alex Kingston delivered some dangerously portentous and bombastic lines marvellously well.
Ooh.
I really did. I thought she showed her acting chops in those last 20 minutes.
We had sort of the whole heaps of ideas thing that was thrown at the last episode. They were thrown into this one. There were the sea lion-headed aliens, Fleming and his assistant. I thought that was good. So, yeah, there were enough funny lines by the end to balance out the ones that misfired. So, actually, because it got better towards the end, and I'm overgenerous when that happens, I'm going to give this episode a 3.5.
Wow. JD, why don't you go next?
Okay. The good was Alex Kingston and Peter Capaldi. I think Peter Capaldi was very good in it. Alex Kingston had a very good rapport with Peter Capaldi. I quite like Ramon. He was okay. The bad, I didn't really feel the point of having Matt Lucas in the episode. Sorry, Matt. I felt that the story was written around having River Song in it rather than writing a good story. And then, you know, it felt forced a lot of the story. I loved the interplay between the two of them, and that is the only reason this score is as high as it is. I think that a lot of the references to the cop-out ending of actually putting them in Deryllium, why would you actually do that rather than just not? If you want further adventures, why invent that the final night is 24 years long? So, you know, just leave that open-ended. Overall, I would give this a... I'd give it a 4, but I'm going to take 0.7 off for the actual pointlessness of Matt Lucas. So it's going to be a 3.3.
Interesting. Okay, I'm going to start off, I'm going to be very, very brief, but I'm going to start off by disagreeing with you, JD, because I think having that sort of tension towards the end of like, oh, this is her final night, it's all coming back to this planet with the singing, whatever they were called, singing pillars of something. I think that really worked. And having the get out of jail free card of, oh, actually, a night here is 24 years long and we've got a time machine, as you pointed out, JD. I think that really, really works. It was kind of an emotional moment for me last night when it was like, oh my God, she's going to die, but obviously she can't die because this is the Christmas episode. It's got to have a happy ending, but I don't know what it is and I'm still kind of sad. Oh, she's got 24 years to live. Nice. It was a very good moment. I think it worked really, really well. So that's number one. I do agree with both of you, though. I think the main reason I'm marking this up is because of the interplay between Kingston and Capaldi. They really, really work very well for me. They work better than, as I said before, Kingston and Smith, for example. Matt Lucas, agreed. Yes, he was there for a very short amount of time and he was utterly pointless. But just like Ramon, I think they were both there for a sufficiently short amount of time. And lastly, so I don't draw this out too much, I'm going to mark this up a little bit more for what went on here on the Pleasure Cruise, which we haven't really discussed in this episode, the Seven Galaxy Cruise. Because that was a cruise ship full of, like, billionaire criminals, which is a pretty cool concept. Everyone there, including the waiting staff, had committed genocide at some point. Like, it was a pretty fun... it's a pretty cool concept, right?
And it ties in with Capaldi earlier in the episode, railing against monarchy as a...
Yes! Oh, we didn't... Yes, I know,
class
yeah.
above. just destroying the hopes and dreams of everyone else.
Of the workers. Yeah, I'm saying that I'm marking this up from where you are, JD, and I'm going to agree with the Droodmeister, the Droodhammer, and say this is a 3.5 for me.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
is that your
thigh
I'm feeling?
Yeah. It's a little bit weird. So I'm going to list the Christmas specials of Doctor Who.
Okay.
Because he can. Because he knows all of them.
And
because he can't sleep if he doesn't.
Is which one is your current favourite? Since we've just had a new one, does this supplant them? Or is this, you know, just in the middle of the pack? So you have the Christmas Invasion.
Mm-hmm.
You have the Runaway Bride.
Excuse me, you have the Feast of Stephen. Then you have the Christmas Invasion.
Yeah, I was going to come to the Feast of Stephen, but yeah, okay. You do have the Feast of Stephen, but if that's the top of your list, you can't.
I'm just doing this chronologically. Okay, carry on, sorry.
Okay, Feast of Stephen, Christmas Invasion, Runaway Bride, Voyage of the Damned.
Which one is Voyage of the Damned again? Is that Kylie Minogue?
Kylie.
Okay,
Kylie.
Yeah.
You have The End of Time.
I don't remember these.
Tennant's last one.
What's that about?
It's the one where Tennant dies.
Yeah, it's his farewell tour.
Oh, yeah. I remember
with
his final
Sender's
scene.
But... You have A Christmas Carol.
Okay.
You have The Doctor, The Widow, and The Wardrobe.
Ugh. Yeah.
You have The Time of the Doctor.
Ooh.
You have Last Christmas. You have The Snowman. And you have Husbands of Riversong.
Hmm. Well, some of them, I'm going to be honest with you, some of those I don't really remember that much about. The Doctor, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, as far as I recall, is utter garbage. Some of the Forest King, right? Like the wooden dude.
It's utter garbage.
Yeah, it's like Matt Smith's shit.
That one.
Yeah, there's like a wooden king. Ugh, shit. Ruined Christmas.
I'm going to duck out of this question early and say, End of Time, Timothy Dalton, Big Robes. I'm out.
Okay.
Oh, as in that's the best one?
Yeah.
Pumpkin?
Hang on. Trying to exclude the losers. Runaway Bride, garbage.
Oh,
no, it's not garbage, but it's certainly not good. Christmas Invasion, I didn't think was fantastic.
Do you hate Kylie?
I don't really remember that. I remember there being like gold angels aboard a space Titanic.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Is that right? Yeah. They were like the robot servants or something and they rebelled or whatever. I don't remember that one being very good. Anyway, like I think the main contenders are probably End of Time, Timothy Dalton and Time Lords and so on and so forth. Plus, I do definitely remember the final words of, oh, I don't want to go yet. Like with Tennant. Really sorry, but Last Christmas is on there for me as well. Even though it made no sense whatsoever. If you want more details about that, listen to last year's Who Back When review of that. And possibly this one. No, it's probably going to be End of Time or Last Christmas for me.
Miserably, we all tend to agree, is that my second one...
Yeah.
Because I have to be contrary, especially with how low you rated it.
Fuse Stephen.
Would have to be Runaway Bride. Would have to be Runaway Bride because of my abiding love of Donald Noble.
Even though it's... Oh.
But right.
This is a war you cannot win, man.
The winner is, for me, End of Time as well.
Okay.
So that has been Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast.
Yes, it has.
Coming up, we will have C036.
Evil of the Daleks.
Which will be Evil of the Daleks. N029.
Smith and Jones.
Which will be Smith and Jones. And from Audio Who...
Yes.
Let's let Leon take this one.
We are listing which ones we're recording next.
Yes. Which one are we recording next? It's The Scapegoat, I believe.
Which will be A018 Scapegoat, which means A017
Wirradorn has already been recorded.
Shit.
Yes, we have recorded
it. Because my boner is coming for your head.
Wow, like lightsaber boner. Yes, we have recorded it. And that should be dropping very, very soon, I think.
Yeah, so 9 months in the making.
Seriously, you could have had a baby in that time. And you had Wirradorn.
Yeah, we are going to give birth to Wirradorn.
Was it as painful as childbirth? Don't spoil it. You have to listen to this. I'm going to listen to this.
Please do. Ladies and gentlemen, please do yourselves a favour and follow us on Twitter, starting with, to my left, Drew, the Droodhammer, the Droodmeister, Droobs, at...
Drew Back When.
Here's a soundbite of past Drood singing how you spell that.
I am found at Drew Back When, because it sounds like Who Back When. Which one did you pick?
I don't know. We'll pick one. On our screen, JD, he is at Marius Kane. That is Kane with a K. And I'm Ponkin.
And because it's Christmas, P-O-N-K-E-N, Ponkin.
Oh, nice.
Oh, jaunty.
A jaunty live rendition from JD. Thank you so much for listening. Catch you in the next one.
Ka-chow.
Ka-chow.
Ka-chow from me as well. Bye-bye. Kablamo. Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what the cosmos compels you to and spread the gospel of Who Back When. Tell your friends. Don't have any friends? No problemo. Tell some strangers. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/whobackwhen. All in one word. Are you on Google Plus? Then find us on Google Plus. That's plus Who Back When. And when you do, tell us why you're on Google Plus. Who Back When just got its very own Twitter account, no lie, so give us a follow. You guessed it, that's @WhoBackWhen, all in one word. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, listen to us on Stitcher, and head on over to our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which increases in kablamos with every episode. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really, really would, but as thanks, we will transmigrate your iTunes nom de plume into the credit list of trailers for fake Doctor Who audiobooks produced by Who Back When. Have a poke around our bonus episodes to make more sense of that. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your ear balls in our next Classic Who Review, New Who Review, or, still funny, Audio Who Review. Ciao.
Who Back When?